Hello and welcome to another comedy interview for my blog, A Rich Comic Life. My name is Richard Gill, and my blog charts over 45 years of watching over 750 comedians and counting. Today, I'm absolutely delighted to welcome my special guest. It's only Maureen Younger.
Oh, I love the intro, Richard. Thank you very much.
Hello, how are you?
I'm all right, given that I can't work anymore.
Oh,
I'm fine.
well, it won't be long until we're back. I mean, come on, you have to support them. Have to support
Fingers
comedians.
crossed.
Thank you so much for doing this. It's going to be an interview about your comedy career, all about you.
I love talking about myself, Richard, so that's a perfect pitch.
So if we can go right back to the start, what inspired you? How did you become a comedian?
Well, I think inspired is the wrong term. Basically, I was doing a kind of rubbish job, which I did all my life. I kind of did all these stupid jobs. And I was a temp, and I was very depressed. I got very depressed, couldn't go to work, so I wasn't earning any money. And I saw a friend who was also a counsellor. And apparently, even though I was like, just crying, 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 I kept cracking jokes, which I wasn't aware that I was doing. And she was like, "You should do stand up." And I'm
That's
like,
brilliant.
I never thought of doing stand up. I never went to stand up. I went to one gig, I think in the 80s, and that was a friend's idea. It wasn't mine. And it wasn't something I
Wow.
was interested in at all. And she went, No, you really have got to do stand up." Because she was saying I was so depressed, but I still kept cracking all these jokes. So she insisted I do a course. I was an actor at the time, very unsuccessful actor, but I was a member of the Actors Centre, so I did a course there, and that's basically what it was. Her idea. If it hadn't been for her, I wouldn't have done stand-up at all.
Wow, it is amazing because I go to a lot of free comedy nights where I know a lot of the comedians and I'm there to support them. You go along as their friend and you're there and they do 5 minutes and of course with my loud laugh I go bananas and try and get the rest of
That always
the
helps,
crowd going. You know,
but
if I
it can be a disadvantage because I too have a very loud laugh, and so if I don't laugh, people know about it. So my joke always knows she's got a bad gig, but I'm not laughing. It's really obvious.
I always sit there in silence. Like, I'm very polite, but you know, it's like, oh, what's the matter? Richard's not laughing, not
Can't work against
laughing
you.
at all. So where was this when you decided to become a comedian? Was it in London?
Yeah, it was in London. It was about 2005,
Right.
and so I did this actor's course. I was at the Actors Centre, did this course, and I was by far the best there, which isn't saying much because the standard was incredibly low. So
Right.
it was like really, really low.
Stop
And
putting yourself down, Maureen.
no, but it was a fact. But I hadn't. It was really funny because as soon as I started doing stand up, all my friends went, "Oh yeah, I can see you doing stand up." You're like, "Why didn't you tell me 20 years ago?" But there wasn't so many comics. There wasn't that much competition. So I did like my first gig was at the Actors Centre,
Wow.
and as soon as I got I did my opening joke, got a massive laugh, and it is like a real adrenaline rush. And I was like, "Oh my goodness!" But it was a very supportive crowd, so they were very, very nice to you. But my first gig was actually went really, really well, and then my second gig, I was at the Comedy Cafe. I died on my arse, and I was like, "I'm never doing comedy again." And an acquaintance, like she became a really good friend at the time. She was just an acquaintance, and she was really into comedy. So she'd been to the Actors Centre, and then she'd come to the second gig, and she went, "Oh, don't be so stupid, Maureen. Everyone dies." And that, because I was like, "Oh, I'm not doing this again." And it was her encouragement that actually kept me going.
It's all about confidence. There's a very famous Des O'Connor story where I think it was the Glasgow Empire, and
Well,
he had to go on do the matinee in the evening one, and the matinee they absolutely mauled him. So he went on an 6:30 one and he fainted. And it was all a joke, but he got dragged off and he said, "If you don't go on at 8 o'clock, you're out."
I mean, it's experience and it's confidence,
Confidence is a massive thing. It
and
really
also
is.
you just have to learn that you will die. Everybody dies. In fact, it can be quite reassuring to see a really good comic die because you think they are really, really good and they still have bad gigs. It's
Oh
everything.
yeah, they have to make them better, I think. They have to experience it. What do you like to talk about on stage?
Me. I mean, I find myself fascinating. I'm not sure everybody else does. But basically, I talk about myself and my life. And yeah, I suppose the viewpoint of a middle-aged woman, because you don't really, the kind of the you don't really see middle-aged women much in the media. I mean, it's beginning to change now.
Yeah.
But also it's a certain type. And it's a certain type. And it's like, I don't recognise myself in those voices. And right. So what's nice is that you'll get people, and it's not necessarily people my age, it's often younger women as well, will come up because they don't hear women, like bolshy women. They don't really see it, or they don't, it's not the voice that they see reflected in the media. So I think that's quite nice, is reflecting a woman who, in fact, who doesn't give a shit.
Very much, very much. I think one of the main reasons why I think you're a wonderful comedian is your frankness. You've got this no holds barred attitude that is just hysterical on stage.
But you know, and it's weird. Like, you're getting young women coming up, going, "Oh my god," you know, whatever. Like, but they don't see that voice reflected because often it's very, you know, the type of women that they, I think that the gatekeepers like to see, usually younger women and women that are often middle class, because middle class women are allowed to speak. And so it's kind of unusual to hear, but it's not but it's out there. They want that reflected back, and you like hearing those voices.
Exactly. That it's so good that you broke through into comedy and you became a comedian. Because did you ever find it any difficulty at all in breaking through with?
Yeah, I mean, I think when I first started, because I was of a certain age, I think it would have been a lot easier for me if I'd started if I had been, you know, my 20s or my 30s. Right. But I think they see a middle-aged woman and they think, oh, she'll last a year and then she'll be off the circuit. I think there is that assumption. People are, when I first started, it's changed quite a bit. But when I first started, it was definitely more sexist than it is now.
Right.
Now people are actively wanting women comedians, whereas they weren't really when I started. And also it's very ageist. So you, and it is quite shocking when you see that, because, you know, it's meant to be this left-wing circuit, but actually it's quite conservative. And so, yeah, you do get these attitudes. And, you know, and it can work for you. Yeah. So, like, you know, I do the urban comedy circuit. So they see this middle-aged white woman come on stage, you know, in a little dress and heels and fishnet type, whatever. And they're like, management's walked on stage. And, yeah, it can work in your favour. Those things. But, yeah, I would say it's ageist. Would I have had more opportunities if I'd been 20 years younger? Most probably.
It's extraordinary, because certainly when I first came to London, I saw French and Saunders, I saw Victoria Wood, and I saw Joe Brand, and that would be it. And I thought it was an absolute disgrace that there was hardly any women at all on the comedy circuit, and now there is so many great comedians.
I think the problem was it was harder for comics to female comics to get up.
Yeah.
A ladder, if you like to speak. So, you know, for those who don't know, when you play the bigger clubs, you have to do an open spot. And I think men were given, it's changed now in recent years, but men were given more rope to hang themselves. Right. So if you, as a male comic, if you had a so-so open spot, they might give you the benefit of the doubt. Assume you're a good comedian, it was just like a so-so gig, and give you another option. For a female comic, you knew that you not only had to do well, you had to smash it. Because if you had a so-so gig, the assumption would be that you're a so-so comic.
Wow.
That would be the assumption. So you've got that double pressure when you have an open spot. Not only have you got to do it well, but you've got to smash it.
That is a lot of pressure, and very unfair. Very unfair.
But that was the other thing is, you know, the standard, the norm of stand-up generally, because most British comics talk about themselves rather than politics, say, or whatever, is that, you know, if a white, straight male comedian goes on stage, he talks about himself, that's stand-up, and it'll be judged about how funny or not the jokes are.
Yeah.
And it's different if you're female, if you're black, or if you're gay. Because if you go, say I go on and talk about myself, you know, obviously I'm talking about being a woman, so I'm not talking about the norm.
Yeah.
So what I'm talking about, it won't be considered stand-up, it'd be considered, oh, she's banging on about being a woman.
Like,
no one would ever say to a male comic who talks about his girlfriend getting pissed and watching the football, say, like, he spends 20 minutes talking about his girlfriend. Oh, mate, you're heterosexual, give it a break, we know about it. But if a gay comic goes on and talks about his boyfriend, it's like, oh my God, stop going on about the fact you're gay. Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of...
Yeah, yeah.
And so you're judged differently, I think. as I say, it's all kind of changing now. They want more diverse lineups.
For the better as well.
Yeah, definitely.
You see a lot of exceptionally funny women who are like you, just fearless and couldn't care less what they said. Well, they do care less, but they are completely confident in their own mind about what they're going to do and what they're going to say on stage.
Yeah, I mean, I've had feedback like, oh, you talk a lot about yourself. And I'm thinking, I've just followed two blokes that have talked about themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they're not seen as talking about themselves. They're seen as doing stand-up. That's what the difference is. So you get judged differently, I suppose. Yeah.
And it's not right that you do get judged differently. So whenever I see you on stage, Maureen, you are always very confident and fearless, as I said at the start. Do you suffer from any nerves before you go on stage, and how do you cope with them?
Generally, I don't, because I can't be arsed, to be honest. I'm too lazy to be nervous. That is the truth. That is too much effort. But I mean, saying that, every now and then I will get nervous, and it might not even be a big gig, it could be quite a small gig. For some reason I'll get nervous, but generally I don't. I remember one gig in particular, and I don't know why, I just thought I was going to die, and I really didn't want to do the gig. And normally I go on there, it's a big gig in Croydon, it's run every year, and normally it used to always run late, so they book me for 15 and then go, oh, can you just do 5? I'd be like, yes. And this time, and I just, for some reason, I was convinced I was going to die. I have no idea why, and I was really up, really getting worked up about it. They went, oh, we're going to put you on first. I had to do my whole 15, and I'm like, oh, shit. And actually, it went really, really well. But I think sometimes what happens is gigs that you think are going to go badly, because you've kind of built yourself, you've got the adrenaline, they actually go well. And then sometimes what can happen is gigs that you think, oh, this is going to be a really easy gig, I'll walk this gig, and actually you can actually not do very well. And I think, but I mean, it's weird. You can never tell. At the end of the day, you can never tell. But yeah, as a rule, I actually am far too lazy to get worked up about gigs.
What was your first Edinburgh festival like?
I went there firstly as an actor in the 90s. That was years ago. Wow. Played Miss Havisham. My dad's only comment was the only time I see you in a wedding dress, which, I mean, to be fair, is quite accurate. But I had no idea that Edinburgh was a big thing in comedy. This is because I had no knowledge about stand-up. So when I first went up, it was like for a week. Right. And then I realised it was like a massive thing. I did a few open spots. But I had no idea. I was completely naive about the fact that it's actually major, important.
I spend my holidays in Edinburgh every year. I go for a week and I see about 50 shows. And by the time I come back, I need another holiday.
That's very impressive.
I've been going for about 15 years. I'm very lucky to be able to go. But of course, my home city is Carlisle. So I go up there. I go up there for the summer. And it's only an hour away, so I normally go middle week, and I just think it's the best. The atmosphere is incredible.
Yeah, I think it's different if you're performing.
Right.
It's a slightly different vibe.
Nerves, I mean, again.
Was it last year? I can't remember now. God, no, not last year. The year before I did a full run. And my advice would be, anyone doing a full run, have a show that you like, be in a venue that you like. And you need a couple of wing people. You need a couple of people to, so you don't go
mad,
basically. And also, don't be deluded. I mean, I enjoyed my Edinburgh, but I had no reviews. I didn't get nominated for anything, but I had a fun time. But you get people whose Edinburgh technically went better than mine, who were disappointed because I think people sometimes think, you know, they're gonna, you know, Edinburgh works for a couple of comics, two or three comics. And it'll kickfire their career, but for most of us, it doesn't. And I think people go there thinking, you know, I'm going to get nominated, and my career's going to change. And you know, for most of us, that's not going to happen.
I think the reason why comedians do it is for the exposure, or acts go up there, music or theatre, wherever, it's for the exposure for the show.
Yeah, and also I think, you know, it does make you a better comic, I think. A, you've got to write the stuff, and then, you know, just by dint of performing it every day.
You know, it does
help, I think. But I think if you go there thinking it's going to suddenly change your career, you might be slightly disappointed.
Do you have a technique for dealing with difficult audiences?
You've got to play the room. I think that's the strength of British comedy, is that as a comic, club comic, you play a lot of different rooms, you do a lot of different gigs, and you play a lot of different audiences. So you learn. But I didn't, you know, when you do all those open spots, which are kind of, I mean, I'd never want to do them again, but they are at the time just mind-numbing. But they do teach you how to play a room. And sometimes some rooms are unplayable, that's just a fact. But, you know, you will try and use your skills and experience, the more experienced you are, to try and do different things. So it might be that you have to banter, or you might have to just do your set and just power on through. There's no one way, because it all depends on what the problem is.
Do you think audiences are different in different parts of the country?
Oh God, yes.
Yeah.
I would say like Midlands audiences. I mean, most people love Midlands audiences. I play a lot in Birmingham. I love Brummie audiences. They're just so nice. You know, they just are. They're just lovely audiences. And I think out of London audiences tend to be a lot nicer.
Right. It's funny because I went up to Carlisle about 18 months ago. My mum sadly passed away, and I was in a bit of a low place. But I went to a comedy night at a club in Carlisle, and the headliners were The Noise Next Door.
Oh yes,
who were excellent. And I went in and I sat down at the back, not at the front normally, and I was really quite low, and I had a pint of beer in my hand. And they said, "Can anybody tell me anything good about Carlisle?" And somebody said Carlisle United. And somebody said, then they said, "Can you tell me anything bad about Carlisle? Because we're going to do a song about it." And my friend, who I was unaware in the audience, yelled out, "Richard Gill." and they went, "Oh my God, is he here? Because he's normally in London." And I'm like, "Oh my God, hello." Fun to be here. I ended up on stage with them. It was wonderful. They really cheered me up. And that is an example of... not being, because I go to a lot of comedy when I'm in Carlisle, but most of my time is obviously in London, and it's wonderful watching somewhere like Carlisle develop into a comedy place, because they do get more and more acts every year, you know.
Okay. So,
not on a grand scale of London, but you know, yeah. But 4 or 5 good comedians per every 3 months is great, you know, so you get about 15-20 a year, and it's fantastic. So but you're right, I mean, Ken Dodd was the most famous for putting all the jokes in different areas of the country.
Yeah, I mean, but you do that, like, so you'll just, you know, if you've got a thing about if you're in, I don't know, Manchester, you might slag off Liverpool.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing, you know, just remember where you are. But you do that in London, so, like, you know, I've got a joke where if I'm South London, it's North London. If it's North London, it's South London.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you get it wrong, you know, you screw up. But, I mean, yeah, that's the time. But, yeah, it's, you know, gigging in Britain, you do, I think London tends to be harder.
Yeah.
Just, you know, they get a lot of comedy. They've seen a lot of comedy. So it's like, you know.
I have a friend who will come along to a lot of comedy gigs with me. And if he's heard something before, he'll say to me, "I've heard this before." And I'll say, "Well, you're going to hear it again, because... you know," you know, "they can't keep churning out new material."
I know. I remember once sitting, I was at the back, and I worked at the comic's name, but there was a comic on stage, and this woman went, "I heard him say that before." And I went, "Well, wait 20 minutes, you hear me say it." Good luck.
Can you tell me how you go about your writing process? Do you have a particular method?
I think process is slightly exaggerated, but thanks, Richard, for thinking I might have one. I tend to steal from my life. Or I'll say things in conversation, think, "Oh yeah, I'll work it out." I mean, what I do though is, and I find that quite useful, is jokes are kind of in the back of my head working away, and I will... It's really funny, when I'm walking, I will come up with toppers.
Wow.
For those who don't know, so like you've got a setup and you've got punchline. If you have a topper, it makes a joke funnier.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of jokes I had, they were okay jokes, they weren't brilliant, they were fine. But I have come up with toppers just while I'm walking. And then
so
your
a
mum.
topper is a better joke, is it? Is that?
Yeah, a topper just makes it a better joke.
Right.
You know, people think the joke's finished, and then you come with something else. So it just makes it a routine, like a richer joke.
Yeah.
And it's really funny. I think it's that process of just walking, you know, that kind of movement. Where that make a great topper, and it just makes it a better joke.
Do you wake up in the middle of the night with ideas, or do you?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then I've done that thing is I won't write it down. I think I'll remember that in the morning. And of course you don't remember it in the morning. There's so many times I've gone, I'll come up with something, or I'll be in conversation, I'll say something, think, oh yeah, that'd make a really funny joke. And then I don't write it down.
And that's it.
I don't remember it. So just don't do a morning. Don't write it down. If you have a good idea, write it down.
Very true, very true. How do you remember all your stories? Does this come from experience, or do you have a way of remembering?
Well, to be honest, you have said them quite a lot. And obviously what happens is like you change around your sets. You might get rid of an old joke and you bring a new one in.
Yeah.
But, you know, you bedded them in, so you do remember them quite well. In fact, the danger can be sometimes with your older material is that you know it so well that you kind of do it as a tape recorder.
Yeah, right.
And then it's not so funny. It's hard to notice when you're doing it, but you notice it when other comics are doing it. So they'll come on stage and go, anyway, this is one joke. And then, you know, because they've said it so often. Yeah. I think what often you sometimes forget are the links. So how you get from one bit to another bit. And I remember going back, something came up. So I was going to do an old joke. And then I couldn't remember how I got from A to B. I hadn't done it for so long. It's like, did I join that? After remembering the link, so after like I hadn't done stand up for 6 months because of the lockdown, and then I was going off to do some car gigs, and I was going through my set, and I couldn't remember all my. It was like more material than this, and I couldn't remember all my jokes. So if you don't do one joke, then sometimes you don't do them because it's kind of
it can come out of sync. Yeah,
and you're like, how is that? And so it was. So that, but you know, if you're gigging three or four times a week, you do remember it because you're doing it all the time.
You're doing it all the time. It's funny because I was once on a training course and they said to me, you're going to have to teach somebody anything. That's the point of somebody will be with you. It'll be recorded. And I thought, I'll teach them the only card trick I know. And I've been doing this card trick for years and years and years. And of course, on the day I stood up and I forgot it didn't work.
Yeah, I mean, I tell you what's really tedious is having to learn your Edinburgh show.
Oh, well, that's an hour. Tedious. That's
I mean,
hour
you're just
long.
Like, when you have to learn that, you're like, it's the most funny thing you can do because it is.
This will be funny.
It will be funny. And what you tend to do is know the first bit really, really well. And then then you get to bits where you're like, and again, it's the links. It's like, how do we get from this bit to that bit? And when the links are perhaps not as great as they should be, that's the problem, because then you're like, because sometimes there can be quite tenuous links, and so learning your show is just
that's great though tedious. When it goes really well.
Oh yeah.
So when I walk in all full of beans ready to see one of my favorite comedians, the amount of work you've done to put that hour on is extraordinary.
And of course, the whole thing is you've got to look like you've just thought
of
that
time moment. You're doing it.
Which is why you get people really surprised that you've repeated a joke. You know, it's hard to write a bloody good joke. And that is the trick, isn't it? The trick is, as a stand-up comedian, is that people think, oh my God, you just thought that. I mean, I remember, because obviously I compare a lot, and there was a German woman in the audience, and I've got quite a lot of material about Germany. And so I did all this stuff about Germany, and they seriously thought I just thought that. And of course, that is a trick, and you let them think that. But it's like, are you kidding me? I've got like 5 minutes of stuff. But you know, that is the trick, isn't it?
You also run and compare comedy gigs.
Yeah.
Do you find this comparing? Do you prefer this to performing an ordinary routine?
It depends. I mean, I do enjoy comparing.
Yeah.
The only downside is you've got to be there the whole night.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can be quite a bit of a pain. And sometimes it can be fun. I do enjoy comparing, particularly my own gigs. I mean, I ran clubs by accident. A resident MC couldn't do it, so I got called in. and then they were going to cancel the night. And I went, oh, I'll run the night. And so I started running the night. And I have to say, running nights are really good for comics, because you realise how big twats, how something, you know, something. Right, and it makes you realise not to be that twat. Yeah. The amount, you know, the amount of comics, like, you'll ask for a photograph, and it's like asking for their PIN number. It's like, just send me a photograph. It's on your phone, or it should be. It's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
Or they'll cancel last minute, or they'll cancel and not tell you, and they go, hopefully that won't put you off booking me. And you think, oh, I think it might do.
Wow.
It does make you appreciate how not to be a twat when promoters. So I would recommend it just for that. And also comparing, I started comparing, realised I wasn't as good as I wanted to be, and stopped comparing, which is a really stupid thing to do.
Right.
And I ended up becoming a resident compare of my nights. And obviously I'm not going to sack myself. So, you know, no matter how badly it goes, I will be booked next month. So, but it gave me the opportunity to learn to not be so good in order to get better. That's the only way you can get better.
Yeah, yeah.
By not being as good as you want to be. You know, that's, you can only get to that stage by in increments, you know. And and it gave me the confidence to be. And I have to say, I think I'm probably the funniest at my own gigs, because, you know, I'm so relaxed. The audience knows me really well.
Yeah, absolutely natural.
So. And I think comparing, Sally Holloway, who taught me at the Actors Centre, who was a very good comic and a very good compare, said to me, if you learn to be a good compare, you'll never be able to work. And I think that's true. It's there's loads of very good comedians, but it's a lot harder to get really good compares. And so you will, you know, I get a lot of work from comparing.
Right.
You know, and I think, you know, and actually a way, I think people often prefer older women as compares, because we can say things to young men that if you're bloke, there'd be a fight. I mean, you kind of remind them of your mother, their mother, so that they will take shit from you that they take from a bloke.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it can be a great laugh. And, you know, you get that situation where you're comparing and they prefer you, and you're on with really great comics and they prefer you to really great comics because they love the banter, and you're like, no, he's a really good comic. And like, oh, no, but we loved you, Maury. And you're just like, oh, yeah, all right then. But, you know.
That's brilliant.
But, you know, and you can, you know, and it's a good muscle. You know, and you can get material from it. Like, I've had jokes where I've just done something off the cuff and thought, actually, that's a really good joke. You know, and you keep it in, and it helps you with your set. I did this gig in Holland, and the audience were they didn't really laugh at jokes. They were really hard work. So I started bantering, and the banter worked. So they loved the banter. So I said to the guy who was following me, you need to probably need to do a bit of banter, because I don't do banter, I just do jokes. And he went on, and he had a really hard time, because that was all he had.
Yeah, yeah.
His armoury. And then for the rest of the tour, they swapped me around. I was on last, because of basically had a hard time. So it's you know, it's a tool that you can use and can actually, it can help you sometimes.
That's,
you know,
when you're that's brilliant. It. That's fascinating, because
you
would normally just think, oh, you know, you go on, you introduce, and, you know, you try and warm the audience up, but you're developing, I suppose, routines as you're going along. Like you say, that's a good joke, I'm going to use that again, you know.
And then, of course, the more material you have, you can, as I said, you know, as at a gig, and this one was German, so I've got German material, so you bring that into your comparing, and they think you've just made that up, so they think you're a comedy genius, and you're like, well, you know, or you've got ad libs, which actually aren't ad libs. I've done 300 times before that year, but you do them as ad libs, you know. Yeah. And it's and I think also comedians, I mean, people don't appreciate how much work a good compare can do,
right?
Or how important it is, but comedians always do. So comedians will always appreciate you, even if you know, other people don't. And as I say, it gives you more options to work. You know, the amount of work I get as a compare, so like. Often Top Secret, if they need a compare, they'll call me in. Top Secret is one of the best gigs in the country.
Yeah, it is superb. We went in October when it was socially distancing.
It's fantastic. And, you know, and I'm usually there at least, you know, often sometimes, you know, every week sometimes, you know, it was only somebody last minute.
Yeah.
And so it's great. And then you're working with fantastic comedians. So you get to see fantastic comics. So, you know, I think comparing is always a good skill. I mean, some people aren't natural compares, and that's fine. But it's worth giving yourself a chance. Obviously, don't be too good, because I want the work. Turn it down.
Of course. But,
you know, I think it doesn't do any harm. I think the problem is, though, if you get to be known as a compere, then people don't want to give you sets. So there's one club that doesn't, you know, they don't really want me to do sets. I'd rather be like a compere. And you're like, yeah, but sometimes I'd like to do sets. You know, so it can work against you. And then I think the danger can be sometimes, if you compare a lot, is that when you do sets, you compare too much in your sets.
Right.
So you've got to be wary that you don't do that, because that's a temptation.
Right. Yeah, of course. You've played many international gigs, as well as UK gigs. Apart from the language, do you find any difference with them? Are audiences different or in any way?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to be as assertive. I remember when I did my first gig in Berlin, I went on stage going, right, you need to do that. You know, you might need to do that in London or in Britain where people have been drinking.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a German gig, so people had turned up an hour early. They were sitting at tables. Nobody was drunk. They're very patient. They're very polite.
Right.
You know, so you don't need to be that, you know, you don't have that kind of song, because sometimes in Britain you do need to kind of, you know, take the stage and make sure that everyone knows that, you know, you're in charge here. I think gigging abroad, you need to know to speak slower, which can be difficult, especially with somebody like me.
No,
it's been really, really fast. You've got a certain rhythm. You need to enunciate, because people learn a language to speak it properly, which, whereas if it's your language, you don't.
Yeah.
So you need to enunciate properly. You need to realise that British English isn't the English that people tend to learn.
Right.
So, you know, we assume that, you know, if they speak English, it's going to be British. It's not. And I don't think British people realise how British English our English is. So even something simple like half four, that doesn't mean anything to an Australian or American. They've got no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, that is a very British thing.
Yeah.
Not to make it so British centric. I did a gig once in Cologne where the English comic did a joke about Arthur Scargill. Now, to be honest with you, I was about the only one who knew who Arthur Scargill was. So, you know, you're Brits, you know, if you've got to be over a certain age to know who he is. You've got to be. And, you know, and it was like, that is pointless. Also, don't be patronising. I remember once being in Berlin and a comic went, have you heard of Robbie Williams? And you're like, this is Berlin, mate. It's not, I don't know, some village in Outer Mongolia, maybe. I mean, they've probably heard of Robbie Williams. You know what I mean? It's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And also there is attitudes. So like I've got a joke where I see somebody, a guy naked. Now in Britain we're repressed, so we find that funny. In Germany they just go, so you saw a guy naked, but what is the talk? And you're like, oh, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. And also, like, I'm very self-deprecating. That's a very British thing.
Of course.
If you're self-deprecating in Germany, they don't laugh. They just look at you, stare at you, and then they'll come up to you afterwards going, I think you need to talk to somebody about these issues. And you're like, no, mate, just a joke. You know, it's, I mean,
that's
I saw a girl once do a thing about blokes leaving the toilet seat up. But in Berlin, it's quite a thing for blokes to sit and pee. It's quite normal. So it's quite a thing there. So it didn't, but if you're British, how would you know that? So I was at the back going, oh, that's not really going to work here. You know, and I'd say the other thing I would warn people against is don't state the obvious. So like, I've done a lot of gigs in Holland for some reason.
Yeah.
And the amount of British comics will say, oh, you've got a lot of bikes in the Netherlands. And it's like, yeah, they know that. That is not news to the average Dutch person that they've got a lot of bikes, you know. Unless you're going to make some witty observation, some original observation, don't state. You know. Oh, the Germans have very long words. Yeah, the Germans know that. That's not news. By the way, I've written a blog about gigging abroad on the Spotlight website, if anybody wants to check it out.
Right.
But yeah, those are the basic things, really.
Right. And no, great answer. Really great answer. Who are your favourite comedians, past and present?
I've got to say Jem Brister.
You have to, yes.
Who I do find hilarious.
She's hilarious. She is she's like you. She's such an original. Two of you make me laugh like a drain.
I mean, she is by far, she's by one of my favourite comics.
Yeah.
I mean, I like club comics who you know, that in Edinburgh that's always used as a bad term. For those who aren't comics, club comics means we're funny. It's with me. Got lots of jokes.
Yeah.
And I do like someone like Andy Askins, who you must have seen.
He's superb.
I mean, He's superb. He's fantastic. Like, you watch Andy Askins, and that's 20 minutes of solid jokes.
Yeah.
Isn't it? It's just, you're just laughing, laughing, laughing. And,
that's, you know, brilliant. And
I love that kind of comic. I'm not going to name them all because then I'm going to forget somebody and I'm going to be into trouble. But that kind of, you know, club comic that's just joke, 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 I simply love. You know, so something like Lee Mack, who's...
he's superb.
You know, his first show at the Bloomsbury was just hilarious, you know. And also, he's so quick. I mean, Lie to You, which I watch. His only panel show I watch. And he's, you just think, how?
He's so quick.
How are you that quick?
Yeah, he really is.
You know, it is really impressive. You know, you're like, because, you know, as a comic, you're often like, you know, people tell you jokes, and as a comic, you often, you've got the punchline before they tell you, but you're with him, you're like, mate. Someone like Zoe Lyons, who, I mean, to her turnover is just, of material is just mind-blowing. You know.
Like me, do you go to many comedy gigs as a member of the audience?
No. And that is the wrong answer.
You're not alone.
I don't. The last thing I want to do on a night off is go to bloody comedy. Now, I know that is wrong answer. But in my defence, Richard, in my defence, I compare a lot and I watch a lot of fucking comedy. I have had the time. Before lockdown, I have to say, because if you're gigging 3 or 4 times a week and you travel a lot, which I used to do, the last thing you want to do if you've got a night off is go out. What you want to do is stay in and watch your DVD. Now, obviously, you've got to be careful what you wish for, because I've been doing that a lot for the last year. But I can remember times when I could be going away for 2 weeks, say, and I'd be looking at my bed going, oh, I'm not going to see this for 2 weeks. I don't know, it sounds pathetic, but, you know, as a comic, you just think, oh, I just sleep in my own bed.
Yeah.
Well, I know it's wrong, and I know I should do and watch comedy, but I don't.
You can't do it.
Much rather.
I can't do it 364 days a year. I do my best, but I can't do it. You need to get away from it. But it is the best thing, and the most wonderful, joyous thing. But you can't do it day in, day out.
No. And as I say, because I do see a lot, because I'm comparing.
So
you have to, you know, and obviously sometimes you're with great comics, and sometimes they're not so great comics. So the last thing I want to do is watch some comedy.
Yeah, of course.
But come and see me.
Oh, yes, of course. We are all living in a very strange world at the moment. What do you think of online gigs as opposed to live gigs?
Well, obviously, I've got my comedy chats on Thursday, which you've been in the audience for, which is not stand up, it's basically comics chatting and being funny.
Talking, yeah, I've been.
Yeah, which is really enjoyable. Online comedy isn't the same as live.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the way it is. Live comedy is always best.
Yeah.
But, you know, in a situation, what else can you do? That's the best we can do at the moment is do it online, but it won't replace live comedy. There is something about being in the room and the interaction between, you know, when you get it right. Like I had run a gig in Birmingham, we managed to get a show in before everything locked down, and it was absolutely brilliant because it was
fantastic.
The energy, it was just the energy going between, I think the audience were relieved that they were out, but it was that energy going between the audience and the act, it's like a tennis match. It's like really good.
Yeah.
Great theatre is the same, where you have the audience give you energy and you give it back, and it's like a what do you call it when they do that all the time in tennis? I don't watch tennis.
Forwards and backwards.
See, volley.
Volley. Yeah.
No, we play back and forth. It is, you know, you can only get that from being in the room that's the advantage of live comedy. You know, because we just ran with it.
I miss it so much. But I go to Always Be Comedy rather a lot, and he's got on the front row. He opens up the front row, so the virtual front row you can chat to and talk to and laugh with. It's very, very well done, but it's nowhere near as good as live.
It can't be.
You can't beat live. It's I so hope it comes back very soon for all of you, because it's been such a tough time.
Yeah, really, and I think you know, and venues have closed down.
Yeah, it's awful.
I used to do a show at the Artrix, which was a wonderful theatre in Bromsgrove, run by very good people.
Yeah.
That closed that week into lockdown, first week into lockdown. And I was there at least once a year. You know, so I think there'll be less clubs. I think there'll be less comics, because I think, you know, if you're a comic, I'm lucky in the sense I don't have any real responsibilities. But if you've got a mortgage, you've got kids, you know, you're gonna have to look for another job, because, you know, the bills are going to be paid.
It is terrible. It's so unfair for all the creativity, because you know, I mean, it's just like, when is it going to come back? You know, but it will come back, because it's just what future does it have? You know.
Yeah, and obviously, comedy clubs. The last thing you want in comedy clubs is social distancing.
Yeah.
You actually want the exact opposite of that.
Yeah.
And that's the problem.
Yeah.
But I think there'll be less. I mean, I think I think it's been concertina down. So when we did that brief period when we could do gigs, we had quite big names doing gigs.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, if you can get those, you're going to get those. And so, you know, it kind of all concertinas down.
Yeah.
So I think there's going to be less work, probably for less money, and less opportunity, you know. But I think it's also forced people to think of doing different things. So, like, me, Jen Briss, Alison, June Smith, we've got our own podcast, Women Talking Bollocks, which I don't know if we'd got that off the ground. Because, you know, as a club comic, it was quite scary, because you just saw your work disappearing.
Yeah.
I've spent, like, what, 15 years building up so I can get work all the time, and then you just sit, disappearing.
Maureen, I so feel sorry for you.
Well, you know, it's me and every other club comic.
Yeah.
And then you realise, you're like, So, no, we've done that podcast, which is doing well. You know, I've done this My Comedy Chats. So you are looking at other options.
You're answering my last question, which is there anything else you would like to talk about? Because your podcasts are fantastic, but you also write as well, don't you?
Yeah, I've got a short story collection called The Void, which basically kind of describes my life right now. that's on Amazon. And I'm also writing another collection of short stories, which were meant to come out for Christmas. Then didn't, and so I'll put them out for my birthday. My birthday's at the end of January. And
happy birthday!
Yeah, that's not happening either. So they'll come out soon. okay, I'm really good at being organised. I mean, you know, it's people, Maureen. Oh, I'll get them out for Christmas. I haven't actually got them out yet, but and I've written them all by September, so I don't even know what the hell I'm doing. But I've got maureenyounger.com. I've got a blog where I write various articles on German literature, French cinema, you name it. Very eclectic.
Good for you. What I like is that you're keeping yourself busy. It's like me with this. The blog, to me, has saved me from lockdown. You know.
Yeah, because... I mean, I have to say, the My Comedy Chats, as we've got people who only did it like for the first few weeks, and I've been doing it since May.
Yeah.
And we've got regulars. I think that keeps them going. It's like a check-in. We kind of know each other now. So.
And when is it? It's every Thursday?
It's every Thursday at 8:30. And it's free to, you just go to my website, maureenyounger.com/mycomedy, and you just sign up. And
It's
you
know. Really good. I've been, it's really real funny. Yeah, and I'm going to come back as well.
We've got good, so far we've had, Mandy Moodin on, we've had Annette Fagan, we've got Zoe Lyons.
Yeah.
It's a good lineup.
Really good. Maureen, I could talk to you all night. I really could. I've thoroughly enjoyed chatting with you. And please, please, please keep doing what you do, because you are one of the funniest female comics I've ever seen. You really are. You're, as I say, it's the total fearlessness that it makes you very, very special. So keep doing what you're doing, and thank you so much for your time.
Bye now.